which year were you born in?
I was born in London in 2000.
And your parents are from Pakistan?
Yes.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about when they moved, migrated to the UK?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
My mother was actually born in London as well.
Right.
So she's first generation because both of her parents had moved from Pakistan to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And they settled in East London.
Mm-hmm.
And my father is a cricketer, so he came with his cricket team from mm-hmm. Pakistan to the UK and settled here after playing for junior teams in the UK and then for lots of county clubs mm-hmm. and met my mother, and they both settled here and decided that they didn't want to move to Pakistan, and his career kind of took off with being a cricket player and a cricket coach, and my mother is a nurse. So me and my two younger sisters grew up in East London, and I have been living there until I came to university.
That smile on my face is because I'm obsessed with cricket.
Really?
So, like, I love cricket.
Well, you're Pakistani, it's natural.
That is true. Okay, that's great. So, you know, around what time did they move to the UK? When was this?
Well, my mum was born in the UK, mm-hmm. so she didn't move, but...
Oh, sorry, I mean, around what time did your dad move to the UK?
My dad, he moved to the UK in 1998.
Okay, so this was in the late 90s, and yes. then you were born in 2000.
Yes.
And do you want to tell me a little bit about your childhood? I mean, this is a very broad question, but yeah. it was like growing up in East London.
Yeah, it was a very big community feeling, because we grew up in an area where there were lots of other Pakistanis and lots of other South Asian people in general.
Right.
So it was a very multicultural and diverse area. It still is. And I had a lovely childhood growing up, really. I am the oldest of two younger sisters, so I had a lot of responsibility taking care of them, which I think is the natural curse of most eldest daughters. And I was in a very big family because my parents and my uncle, so my dad's younger brother, we all lived together in the same house.
Right.
And once he married and started his own family, we were all still living together. So that only made the community bond even stronger, because we had two families living in the same house. And it really emulated the kind of traditional Pakistani lifestyle that my parents, that my dad especially, grew up having, because he's also from a very big family. And he's one of eight siblings, but also had eight other step brothers and sisters. So I think that it was really, I guess, similar to the kind of childhood that he had. And
right.
we had a very active childhood. We also went to play cricket in the cricket grounds with him. I did lots of swimming. I was very involved in school. I was, funnily enough, very involved in lots of Christian activities as well, because I was really interested in singing and performing in dramas. So I was involved in school musicals and in the school choir. So often my family would laugh, because at Christmas time I would be the one who was coming home late, or they would pick me up late because I'm going to church to sing in the choir with everybody.
Yeah.
And I think it was slightly strange experience for them, but they took it all in good fun and they didn't have any problem with it. And yeah, I think that's always been kind of the feeling growing up. There's lots of fluidity, but also of rootedness in our community.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way of looking at it, because this neighborhood that you grew up in, was it a South Asian majority neighborhood?
Yes.
So you had that sense of community, and then you had this family, this, you know, the joint family thing at home.
Yeah.
What would you say was the most positive? What would you say were the positives of being in a joint family and the negatives of being in a joint family?
The positives were that it was so much fun.
Yeah.
We always had somebody to talk to. And even though it was me with my two younger sisters, and it was mostly just adults, so we always had each other to play with as kids, but with the adults, I felt like I had two sets of parents, basically, because that's how close the bond is. And that persists even till today. Even now, when we've separated and my uncle has moved up north to Manchester with his own family, but I see them not so much as my cousins, but his kids are like my brothers and sisters. There are no holds barred in our relationship. I would talk to them as freely as I would with my own parents. All the dramas and scandals are very much each other's business because we had a really strong bond, and I hope that carries on.
Yeah, that sounds lovely.
Yeah.
And any negatives of being in, both the fact that you were so embedded in the community and being in a joint family system?
I think growing up, I didn't realize that these were the negatives because as a child, you just don't have that sort of perspective. But it wasn't until I grew up and then moved out of my my neighborhood and moved to Oxford to do my undergraduate degree that I realized just how stark a contrast there is to places that don't have a majority of South Asian people. And I wasn't prepared for that, I think, because growing up in London, there is so much diversity everywhere, and Oxford is not the same. It's much smaller and much less diverse by that front. So I definitely felt like I stuck out like a sore thumb, and that made me quite self-conscious and realised that as much as it was lovely to have a community growing up, I was shielded from maybe the realities of being in the UK because I just never had to confront my identity being different to other people's identity in that way before.
So this was very much the first time as an adult moving away from home,
right,
that you were in an environment where your community wasn't sort of the majority.
Yes.
Yeah, right? So if I understand it correctly, mm-hmm. your school life was based mostly with other South Asians?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you want to first, before we talk about what that was like moving to Oxford and, this mm-hmm. having to sort of come to terms with this new social reality.
Yeah.
What was it like for you growing up in, what was the social life at school like? Was it more, so you said there were mostly other South Asians.
Yes.
Yeah.
The social life at school was, it was very a buzz. We had a lot of different friends or we would call them aunties. So all of our classmates, their mothers, they would just be aunties to us. And we would have, weekend activities, birthday parties. There was a lot of interaction. As kids, I think that as a child, I was very privileged to have a lot of people to kind of tap into. I had a very active social life as a child. And when I was in my teenage years too, being in the secondary school, I went to an all-girls school. And I think that was much the same. I had a group of friends who were pretty much all South Asians. Mm. There were still other, English girls in the school or other black girls in the school, and there was never any kind of distinction or separation. It was very, very friendly. So,
and was there a lot of socializing?
Yeah.
Different ethnic and racial groups?
Yes. Yeah, there was. I had lots of different groups of friends who were from all different places, and my parents were, I think they were nervous to let me go and, go out by myself a lot. I struggled with that growing up, but they never stopped me from spending time with the people that I wanted to spend time with, so long as they thought that they were a good influence. Mm. And, so I think that it was a very interactive social situation that I grew up in.
Right. And if I can ask you, what was sort of the role of religion in the household? Did you have religious education? Mm. And what about within the home?
I did have a religious education in that I would go to mosque classes after school every few days, probably 3 times a week.
Right.
And that was to read and recite the Quran and just generally learn Islamic teachings and practices with kind of a reading group. So I would go every like every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from when I was quite young. As young as I can remember, I recall going to classes to kind of learn and read and write, learn to read and recite Arabic.
Right.
And I'm just trying to remember the second part of your question now, sorry.
Oh, no, that's, what about within the home? What,
oh, yes.
Yeah.
Within the home, well, my family are religious, we're all Muslim, mm. and I think that we had a very traditional way of practicing Islam in our home. It was very Pakistani coded, and I definitely grew up praying with my mum all the time. My sisters, not so much, but also I was kind of raised to be with her alongside all of the big religious events. So during Eid celebrations, I would go with her to visit other people, go with her to do all the grocery shopping, go to the masjid with my family.
Mm.
I was very involved, I think, in my Islamic education. I was
right.
interested in it, and I wanted to pray myself. And I think most people in my family did pray, apart from my dad, actually. Everyone in my family, so all the adults, my aunt and uncle and my mum, all prayed regularly, and I did too, apart from my dad. And that was always a point of contention, because he was Muslim, but he didn't feel, I don't know, he never really connected with praying, and that was something that my mum always voiced as a bad influence or a bad role model to us as children in the family.
Right. And what are your thoughts on that?
I think growing up, I did think it hypocritical at times when, you know, there are moments as a child when I didn't want to pray because I was busy doing something, or I wanted to play, or I wasn't in the mood for it, and my mum would tell me, no, you have to, and then encourage me to go and do it. And I would get some kind of exasperation or frustration seeing that there's a double standard, that as an adult, as my parents, my dad should have been setting that example, but didn't. So there were points where I did think that it wasn't fair, but I think now I don't really blame him, because I have much better understanding of how everybody's individual relationship with religion
yeah.
manifests in their own ways.
Right. So what about, you know, sort of the everyday life at home? You know,
mm-hmm.
your parents both of Pakistani origin.
Yeah.
What kind of food did you have? And what did a typical day in the, you know, as when you were in school, what was a typical day or weekend like?
Yeah. Well, we always had Pakistani food.
Mm-hmm.
It was always different. I don't know how much I should translate for you in this interview, but lots of different salads.
Oh, no, please go ahead. I love talking about food.
So, yeah, lots of different curries. We always had Pakistani food growing up, and it was a norm. We grew up with it. I don't remember home food being anything other than Pakistani food.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that we didn't have maybe different cuisines when we would go out to have food from different restaurants. We would often go to maybe like Chinese restaurants or something like that.
Right.
And everyday life was busy. We were very like routined in our everyday routines. My dad was always at work. My mom was always at work. We would go to school. I would have after school activities, either going to my mosque classes or going to swimming lessons or going to music lessons or anything of the sort. So I had a very busy childhood, and my parents were also very strict about our education, so
mm-hmm.
I studied a lot. I went to tuition quite often from the age of maybe 9, to be honest, because they wanted us to have the best education, the best chances of going to schools or university. So I did the 11 plus exams, so I studied very hard for that. And then I stayed in tuition for most of my secondary years, and yeah, I think that we had a lot of pressure on us for our academic performance.
Mm-hmm.
So as we got older, my dad especially would deter us from going, you know, to socialize with people so much, and would encourage us to study at home more or go to the library to study more. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. What about languages? Do you
yeah.
Which language did you speak at home?
My dad spoke to us in English exclusively.
Right.
As did my mum, actually. So we grew up being bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because when I was born, I first learned how to speak Punjabi because my grandmother on my dad's side lived with us at that point.
Right.
And she only spoke Punjabi. And when I went to school, I didn't know how to speak any English then. So I was at nursery and my dad, I think, was very upset and maybe ashamed that I came home from school and I was upset, or the teacher had had a conversation with my parents that I couldn't interact with the other students because of my lack of English. And that made him, I think, very hyper aware that he wasn't doing enough to give me the full set of tools to immerse in the country and in a British society. And that's when things changed. So my dad only spoke to us in English, and he encouraged my mum to speak to us in English. And growing up, I would hear my family speaking in Urdu. I would talk to my cousins and my family in Pakistan over the phone in Urdu, and my grandmother as well. So I do know how to speak Urdu, but I think that it's quite different. It's not native at all.
Right.
And there was never really a big push or an emphasis to learn Urdu well. It was just to learn English really well, because that was a point of pride for my dad in particular. And I think that my parents assumed that we would always kind of absorb Urdu just by being in and around it in our culture. So it wasn't as much of a necessity as it is to learn English, which is obviously a very useful international language.
Yeah. And so how many languages do you speak?
I would say that I speak English and Urdu, you know, well. And I speak Arabic now because I studied it for my undergraduate degree.
I'm learning it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well done. So, yes, I would say three languages. I'm learning French too because my husband is French. So now that's a fourth one in the mix. I would say I understand Punjabi, but I don't really think I can speak Punjabi at all.
Yes, okay, yeah. So you are multilingual then.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Ishwar, when you were growing up, did your family go back to Pakistan often?
We did a few times, but not that often.
Right.
I think in my lifetime I've been to Pakistan five times.
Five times?
Yeah.
Okay, and how was that?
It was great.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there's a very clear divide. It was great when I was younger.
Mm.
I have very distinct memories of being young, maybe between the ages of 5 to 10, and going and spending time with my cousins, playing, having Eid celebrations together, and really having the full range of a childhood experience in Pakistan. In the best way. It was unrestricted fun. We went to amusement parks, we went to each other's houses, we ate lots of nice food, we played on the roofs of houses, we had a great time. Only when I got to be in my teenage years, and I think I went back when I was 16 for a family wedding.
Right.
That was the first time, and the most recent time that I've been to Pakistan, that I really didn't enjoy the experience. I felt like it was really restrictive, really really unfair. I've definitely felt this kind of imposition and suffocation in a way. I didn't go out and do much.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for a wedding, so there wasn't much to go out and do and see. I mostly stayed within my family's home.
Right.
In Kushanvala. And my dad was often with his own family or with his friends to catch up with people. And I think that I was quite resentful in hindsight that he didn't do more to kind of facilitate my experience as an older girl being in Pakistan to enjoy it in the same way. Because then I think that I was expected by all of the other people I was living around to kind of get on with things the way that other Pakistani girls do, or like my cousins did.
Right. And what did this mean to you, you know, this, what did Pakistani mean to you, being Pakistani mean to you, or rather being of Pakistani origin mean to you growing up, and what does it mean to you now?
Sorry, I just have a bit of a cold.
Oh, no. Okay.
What did Pakistani mean to you? Well, it was my whole identity. I had no... I think I had a very little self-awareness of being British because I felt like I had a very Pakistani upbringing.
Right.
So that was the only part of my identity that I really recognized as my identity. Like, I didn't think that I was anything other than that. Being Pakistani to me meant being with my family. It meant watching Bollywood movies with my uncle. It meant having Eid celebrations with my cousins. It's very much focused around food and celebration. Mm. It also has negatives, like there's lots of gossiping and I think, you know, drama as well was a big theme growing up. Lots of family drama, lots of, you know, fights or arguments with different people that my mum had fallen out with, for example. So in a nutshell, I think that's what being Pakistani meant to me. And I didn't really understand, going to Pakistan, how that version of Pakistan was different to the one that I experienced growing up, if that makes sense. I think that going back to Pakistan and visiting my friends and family there was a different variety of being Pakistani, because it was native Pakistani. Mm-hmm. And so as diaspora Pakistani, I had a much more filtered experience of certain things. I had much more freedom, which I can't deny at all. I had much more interaction. I think I remember having a picture of my birthday party sent to a few aunties or friends in Pakistan, and I had some of my friends from school there who are not just South Asian. There were some white girls who were English. Some of my black friends were also there. And I remember that my family in Pakistan were really surprised. They thought that it was crazy that I had such a diverse friendship group, and they had nothing bad to say about it, but it was a big point of shock to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was kind of the difference for me, and that's what Pakistani means to me growing up.
Growing up here, did you ever have, can you recall any negative experiences on account of your race or religion?
Not where I grew up in London.
Yeah.
The only negative experiences that I've had have been outside of that community. Mm. So, like, I can only really tell you about Oxford because I've lived here for the last 5 years,
yeah,
ever since I moved out for my undergraduate degree. And that was the only time that I experienced racism. I went to a very small college for my undergraduate degree, St. Bennet's Hall, which has shut down since then.
Right.
But it was a very small community. There were only about 25 people who were admitted every year. And I was one. I was only, like, there were three other girls who were Asian by any definition. So one was South Asian and the others were from different parts of Asia. And I remember that it was very odd, very exposing to be in a situation with lots of other white people who didn't understand, I think, our cultural differences, who weren't very sensitive about it because they maybe grew up in places that they didn't learn how to be sensitive to other people's cultures. In university, that was the first time that I experienced racism, where a alumni came back to our college and was visiting, and I was in the dining hall with a few other people, but I was the only Asian person there, any person of color there, to be honest. And this alumni is an older white man who shook everybody's hand apart from mine, who said hello to everybody apart from me, who very pointedly ignored my presence in that situation and walked out very promptly after meeting with everybody else. And that was the first really racial encounter that I had.
And this was as an undergraduate student?
Yes,
yeah.
So when I was 19. So that has been my standout negative experience as being Pakistani. Apart from that, I do think that I've had friendships that have suffered with people who aren't a person of colour or who aren't Asian. Well, actually, I don't think that I've had any kind of obstacles to maintaining friendships or having connection or friendships with people who are people of colour, but it's mostly just been with white people who don't understand or who don't really feel comfortable sometimes fully connecting or fully being normal or letting their guard down. And it's something that I have gotten better at recognizing. I would always think growing up that maybe I'm just weird, maybe I'm just not very social, I don't know how to talk to people, until I realized that actually people have a very different way of approaching me and having a conversation with me when they're white compared to when they're brown.
Right. I mean, thank you for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, your life after moving out from home. So, how did you decide where to go for your undergraduate education, and what were your, you know, what did you study? What subjects did you study then?
So I really wanted to leave London and kind of move away from my family by the time I was applying to university, because I started to feel like it was too stifling and too restrictive. I didn't think that my parents were well equipped to deal with me wanting more independence and mobility, I guess is the easiest way to explain it. So I thought that being somewhere far away from my family would ease that, because I would make my own decisions, I would have my own space to have some separation. So I only applied to universities that were far away from home. I applied to a few in Scotland, and Oxford is actually the one that is closest to my family, being in London. And the decision was made for me in that I was really interested in history, actually, and I went to a very competitive sixth form in East London called Brampton Manor Academy, and they have a specialised kind of faculty to help you with your university admissions, and they really encourage everybody to attempt to apply to Cambridge or Oxford, because they're very keen on having a good like intake rate for all of their students. So I was encouraged a lot to apply to either Oxford or Cambridge. I did open days to both places, and I really liked Oxford compared to Cambridge, and Cambridge is much too close to my family, so the decision was made for me on that front too. And when it came down to it, I was looking at where is my best opportunity to get a offer from Oxford, because history is very competitive. And looking around, I found that the Arabic and Islamic studies course was really good for intake rates. And I really became interested in it because I had always wanted to make sure that my Arabic was better. I could read and recite Arabic because I had learned how to read the Quran, but I was really interested in knowing a language properly, and I always wanted to travel. I think that I definitely was attracted to that idea, that it would give me another tool of traveling and freedom.
Right.
So I wanted to do Arabic with Islamic studies, and that ended up being a multidisciplinary course with history, Arabic, literature, sociology, all things basically.
And this was your undergraduate?
Yes.
And now you are a master's student here. Okay, so, you know, tell me a little bit about, let's start with acceptance when you got in. How was that?
It was so good. It was so exciting. I was on the bus going to my sixth form and to pick up my results on results day.
Yeah.
And I had the email that morning confirming that I had gotten the offer, like I had met the grade requirements to go to Oxford.
Right.
And so I opened it on the bus before I even had my results, and I called my mum immediately, and she was crying. She was so emotional. It was a really big moment for my family that I got an offer to go to Oxford. So it was a lovely, lovely day. And I remember when I went home to see my family after I picked up my results, my dad was so emotional. I've only seen him cry for me when I've had really big educational milestones. And it meant a lot to my family that I had kind of brought a lot of like honor on them as parents and on my family in general to have gone to the most elite university, you know, in the UK at least, and, you know, globally it's very prestigious too. So acceptance was great. There was no kind of restriction by them that I should go and take up this opportunity. They encouraged me a lot.
And what about you? Well, how was it moving away for the first time, like you said, to an environment that was non-majority South Asian?
Yeah.
And, you know, coming from a big family to now being a student living on your own.
It was very weird. I think I was very prepared for it because, in the sense that I wanted to have my own space, and so I was excited. And then when I did get to Oxford and my parents, you know, left me with all my things and I had settled into my accommodation in my college, it was odd because I wasn't cooking for myself. It was odd to adapt to mostly just English food every single day.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rude awakening in some aspects. And definitely I didn't feel the sense of community in the same way that I was used to growing up. But I was prepared to feel that difference anyway, because I knew that I had a unique experience in my childhood of living with a big family. So I think that I became kind of reclusive because of that. I was very awkward and unaware how to deal with certain aspects of being different in Oxford, especially in a small college where I was also one standout, you know, person of colour. So that made me quite shy to make friends. I made a few friends who I became close to, and I only really stuck with them. I don't think that I felt very encouraged to expand my social circle. I think I also suffered by not going to clubbing events or going to pub events or anything like that, because I didn't drink. And I had been so scared to go clubbing because of the conservative, traditional, you know, values that my parents had. And they were very nervous as well to send me to university. And, you know, in case I did have those experiences, they were worried for my safety. They were worried for me being under bad influences. So I was very scared to go. Even though my parents weren't around, I was very scared to do anything that I knew would make them upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an anxious disposition anyway, so I think that I felt a lot of shame and fear around living my life in a way that was so dissimilar to my family.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that answers the question.
Has that changed over the years?
Immensely. I am a completely different person now than I was then. I didn't do anything of that sort in my first year of university, and I think that I realised by the end of it how much I had suffered for it, because I was so scared of those settings or the environment of being in a pub or being in a club or going to a party or something like that, where, you know, the fear of alcohol or something was around, which was very like demonised in my family growing up. I was so afraid of just the connotations of those things that I didn't realise that I can go and still hold true to my beliefs and, you know, refrain from drinking any alcohol if that's what I wanted, but still have a good time. I didn't know how to kind of be fluid in my identity, but in a different social situation. And then I took stock by the end of my first year, and I was aware that I had really suffered for it.
Mm.
And that made me very different. My second year of university, I had a year abroad to Tunisia because of my Arabic program. And while I was there, I had much more freedom because I was on a completely different continent than from my family.
Yeah.
And I went to parties, I went, you know, to clubs with my friends, I started to drink, and I realized that all those things that I was afraid of were kind of oppressing for the person that I was. And so having had those experiences, I struggled a lot with guilt and shame still, because I was experimenting and I didn't know what I really wanted to do. I didn't really know what beliefs I wanted to hold true to anymore. And that was also a moment in my life where I stopped praying regularly. So I think that also compounded my feeling of being different and kind of forging a new identity, knowing that I'm not going to ever be that person that I was living with my family in a Pakistani household, in a Pakistani environment. And that also was forced on me a bit by having a relationship with somebody who wasn't Muslim, who wasn't Pakistani.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that it makes sense in this situation, because a lot of my growing out of that fear and anxiety was by making a friend. And so his name is Benjamin, who is now my husband and was then my friend. And he was very kind. He was the only person really in my college that I felt was normal around a person of colour. And so we became friends, and he made me feel quite comfortable with having a white friend. And he was very normal about my identity and very respectful of all of my religious choices and cultural choices, and introduced me to other friends of his. And so I then had a kind of gateway into a social circle that was much more diverse and inclusive and understanding, and I never felt like the odd person out anymore. I just guess because they had been socialized to understand how to be sensitive to other people from different cultures and backgrounds. And then that progressed. He also came with me on my year abroad. And while I was experimenting with my lifestyle and my identity, he was around me, and we were in a relationship at that point, which was a secret from my family because I would have been in big trouble.
Yeah.
And and I think that my identity changed a lot because I realized that I didn't actually want to be in a Pakistani in a relationship with a Pakistani person in my life. So that was a big realization for me too. So I think this is a very messy way of saying that my relationship kind of evolved in tandem with this relationship.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
How did that sort of change your sense of self? You know, you're telling me about like this journey.
Yeah.
Just all of these changes and just a little bit of reflecting on that.
I definitely felt like I was a different person. I didn't feel Pakistani anymore, quote unquote. Only because I didn't know what it meant to be Pakistani if I wasn't doing it the way my parents were doing it. And when I then, you know, was living away from them, I didn't visit home very much either. This was a moment in my life where I had a pretty strained relationship with both of my parents. And that's because they ended up finding out that I was in a relationship with somebody that I was in a relationship, first of all, which was a big problem for them.
Yeah.
That I was in a relationship with someone who's not Muslim or Pakistani. So that was the trifecta. They were freaked out. And so I didn't speak to them very much. I didn't visit home very much. I had my own place in Oxford that I would stay at most of the time, or while I was abroad, I was there and I didn't speak to them. So I really had to have some distance and separation from the version of myself that was their daughter, that was that version of myself, if that makes sense. But I still did things that made me feel true to myself. I would still hold, like, you know, film nights with my friends, and we would watch Bollywood movies. I would still listen to Asian music. I would still cook Pakistani food. I would cook it for my partner as well. Like, he was very excited and interested in learning about my culture and wanted to be fully immersed in my culture too. So that helped me to kind of root a sense of myself. But it's very different being Pakistani with somebody who's not. And I think I always feel that I'm two different versions of myself when I'm with my family, as in my parents, and when I'm not. I don't think that I don't feel Pakistani, but I definitely feel like a much whiter version of a Pakistani now than I was.
And that's also what you said about it doesn't have to mean one thing to be of Pakistani origin or one thing to be Muslim, right? There are different kinds of Muslims and there are different kinds of Pakistanis. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, again, thank you for sharing. That's just... do you feel that the university and your college, you told me about this very, very jarring incident at your college.
Mm.
So you spent so much time in Oxford now, you know, your life is very different. But what would you say as the university, at the college level, at the university level, is it an inclusive environment for Muslim students or minority students?
So my college was... it was a Benedictine Catholic denomination that ran that college. So it was very Christian in its culture, in everything that we did. And at first, that really freaked me out. It didn't make sense to me that every single night at dinner, I was living in college accommodation, so dinner was served with everybody in the same time. It didn't make sense to me that for dinner, we would have a reading from a religious, you know, Catholic book that everybody had to listen to. And over time, I became comfortable with it. And in fact, I missed it when I didn't have it sometimes because it just became a connotation of my university life and my friends at my college that I really enjoyed spending time with. So I think the college didn't know how to deal with other religions. They knew how to deal with Christian students very well. But they tried their best, and they really had good intentions, but I just think that they had a lack of experience, which meant that it didn't always translate in the best way. So, for example, I wanted to have a space to pray in my college that wasn't just in my room, because my room was on the very top floor of the building, and if I was going back and forth from classes, yeah. I needed something that was a bit more easy to go to. And there was a chapel that was available on the ground floor, so the college told me that I could pray in the chapel and use that as a multi-faith prayer room. So I kept a prayer mat in there and a headscarf in there, and it was very okay for them. They didn't have a problem with that. I had a halal diet. They did accommodate that, but there were moments where it was awkward because, you know, like when dinner is served, then it was usually we were seated and people would serve us dinner.
Yeah.
There were moments where I would just remind the server, like, oh, by the way, I have the halal food. And they wouldn't know what it meant most of the time. When people would change, like the staff, they had no idea who I was, so they would be confused. They would have to go and check. And it would make it less natural. It would obviously be awkward for people around me because, you know, you stick out in a way. So there were those things that were kind of abrasive and made me uncomfortable about myself and my identity in college experience. But they never stopped us from asking for things. They always tried to accommodate us if we needed to pray, if we wanted to excuse ourselves from any religiously, from any kind of religious ceremony or situation that was going on within the college. So the college, I think, had good intentions. With the university, I don't think that I had much interaction with them, to be honest, to really feel like they had done a good or a bad job. I think, on the whole now, my experience at Oxford for the last 5 years has made me understand that the university isn't very good at being inclusive for all its students, for all the range of its students, because there's a big separation between Central University and colleges. So I think that they just put the onus on the colleges to deal with that.
Yeah.
And that means that there's no standardized way of dealing with your students because it depends on the personal people who are working within each college and what their beliefs are and what their attitude is, and also really depends on the kind of students that they intake. If they have a much less diverse student intake, it makes it much more abrasive and harder for people of colour to feel comfortable and integrate well. So I think that the university could do better by making a much more standardised format across the colleges.
Right.
And also making sure that all of its staff are trained and equipped to understand cultural sensitivities and differences, which I get the impression isn't like a requirement. And I say that because I'm at Magdalen now and I am part of the MCR committee as the welfare officer. And we've recently had conversations with the college administration to ask them to do racial bias training, so to make sure that they are, you know, aware of how to deal with the range of students that they might come in contact with. And they refuse, and they don't want to. And it's not a requirement by them from the university. And it's something that we're asking for as students, but there's a clash there, basically. So I get the impression that there isn't a standardized way of making sure that all college administration is able to, you know, make students comfortable.
Ishra, I mean, you know, 5 years on, it's been 5 years since you left.
Yes.
And I've been living in Oxford.
Yes.
You know, you're now from that small college, very, very small college, you're now in Magdalen and, you know, you're married. And you're part of the MCR?
Yes.
How has your social life, you know, you've talked about it, how it's changed so much.
Yeah.
But how's your social life now with South Asian communities? Do you still crave that connection with other South Asians or other Muslims? And in terms of, you know, are you part of certain organizations in the university?
No, that's the short answer. I am not in any kind of societies. I've always been somebody who's been much more involved within my college, and that was just always more, I don't know, doable with my schedule, with school and everything. And I was living in colleges for most of my time in Oxford. I have been living within college accommodation. So I've always been very stuck into college life. And that meant that my engagement with societies was limited. I've always enjoyed going to different events. Yeah. I've never shied away from being involved in different South Asian events or meeting other friends and things like that. But I just don't naturally force myself to go there or seek it out, which has meant that I don't have many South Asian friends in Oxford at all.
Right.
I only have those few that I went to colleges with.
Mm.
And I'm happy with that because I don't think that I crave it. I don't think that I need it. I don't think that I lack a sense of community with the friends that I have made here who aren't South Asian. And I think that I have a very good network of friends that I grew up with who are still in London, who are mostly South Asian. And I enjoy whenever I go and see them, they come to visit me here in Oxford too. So I think that that fills kind of the void in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you want to talk a little bit about your academic journey at Oxford?
Sure.
What that's been like?
Yeah. Well, it was very difficult to be a student at Oxford because there's imposter syndrome, number one. I didn't come from a very prestigious schooling background. Like, my family are very working class, and I came from a very working class area. And I wasn't used to seeing students who are very confident in their ability. I was nervous in my own academic ability. I knew that I had done a huge achievement by being in Oxford in the first place, but that didn't mean that I felt like I was, you know, top of the class or anything like that. So I think that I struggled a lot with imposter syndrome. I struggled a lot with how other people had school experiences from private education, for example, that allowed them to feel confident, that allowed them to be more vocal, to ask questions, or to also just be naturally a bit more well-trained and smarter in some aspects of our school experience. So I think that I felt that disparity quite sharply. And it took me a long time to kind of become comfortable with my place in my course, basically. It was a small course as well. It was only about 20 people. So we had classes every single day for our language and our other course requirements, and we were all together. So it took me some time to become comfortable with everybody. But I did, and I tried my best, and I think truly it wasn't until maybe my third year of university here. I did a 4-year undergraduate course, so the third year was my penultimate year here, and I really felt like that was when I was most comfortable and confident. I was much more vocal in my classes. I was doing much better because I stopped thinking so much about it. And I always tried really hard, but I think before that I tried really hard out of fear, and that meant that my work wasn't as good as it could have been. My essays didn't get the feedback that I really hoped I would. But I think also just naturally being at Oxford and spending more time here and having more training and instruction, you just naturally get a bit better. And so I did feel that I was progressing and getting better. And I'm very comfortable with where I am now. I don't feel like I have any difference to anybody else. I understand that my upbringing and my educational journey has been different to other people's, but I don't feel embarrassed about it. I'm not shy about it anymore. I'm quite proud of it, in fact, because I think that I've come a long way considering that I haven't had the privileges that most other people here have had.
And what made you decide to pursue a master's degree?
When I got to the end of my undergraduate degree, I was really enjoying what I was doing. I was taking courses. My fourth year, that was the time I was allowed to choose my own courses that I wanted to do. Before that, it was all set from the faculty. So in that year, I chose papers that I really enjoyed. And I just felt like I wasn't ready to stop because it was something so new to me. I was doing a lot of papers based in the Middle East Center that were for politics and for history courses. And I think I just got a taste of what a master's life could have been like, and I decided that that's what I wanted to do, and this course that I'm doing now is a 1-year master's program, so
right.
It really worked well. I think that it gave me enough of a continuation, but it wasn't so long that I felt like I was stuck. So I think it felt very natural to me. I was encouraged by my professors too. They thought very highly of my work. They really wanted me to try to do the master's program. So that also helped. And yeah, that's where the decision was.
Do you want to talk a little bit about future plans?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
completely up to you.
No, it's fine. I'll be honest that I don't have many future plans right now. I'm applying to different fields of work in London mostly because I'm also finding a place where I think I'm ready to go back to London and be close to my family and my friends there, and I'm excited for it. So I'm applying to work in local councils and government schemes because I've always been interested in politics and I think that I want to start there. And I'm hoping that something good will come out of it, touch wood. And I'm married now, so my husband, Benjamin, he also did the same degree as me. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, he's working as a researcher at Oxford University. So he'll also be at the end of his project here.
Yeah.
And he's also ready to move on, so we're both committed to kind of going to London together.
Yeah.
And if not, he's French, and I'm always very happy to move to France and have a different experience.
Yeah.
So we're basically just seeing how it goes until then.
Sense. Do you want to sort of reflect on how your identity, I mean, firstly, if you're comfortable with this, what does your faith now mean to you? What does being Muslim now mean to you socially and personally?
Being Muslim to me personally now is being connected to praying. I found that that was the most important aspect of my faith. That was the part that I felt the most connected to. And I've realized that when I haven't been praying, that's when I felt my most peculiar, the most kind of out of sync with my identity or with my peers or, with my family too. So I never really enjoyed that. So personally, I try to pray as regularly as possible. Mm. Socially, what does my religion mean to me? I mean, I don't wear the hijab. None of my family do either. So I've never felt like socially I've been kind of labeled first and foremost as like a Muslim. I think my appearance does give it away somewhat because I'm from an Asian background. But I don't think that anybody in my social cycle has ever made me feel kind of singled out because of my religion. I think I've always felt singled out because of my culture and because of cultural differences. But religiously, I've gladly not had any Islamophobic, experiences or anything like that. And my friends are very comfortable with when I need to go and pray, for example, if I'm in the middle of something, if I'm at somebody's house, or, they'll very happily let me have a space to pray there too. I don't have a strict halal diet anymore. So I don't eat pork, but that's about it really. I do drink alcohol, and those parts of my faith, I think, are difficult for people to understand because it's obviously not a traditional way of practicing Islam, but I have also become much more comfortable and confident practicing Islam in the way that I see fit.
Yeah.
And this is one part of my life that my family don't know about, but it's one part of my life that is more manageable to me because I also have to reconcile with the fact that I have in-laws who aren't Muslim and who aren't from a country that has easy access to halal diet, and food is a big part of French culture, and so integration into my in-laws' family and lifestyle was made much easier by not having these kind of strict requirements. And I was made aware that by my husband that they are kind of nervous about how to accommodate these strict requirements that they perceived comes with having Islam as your religion. And so to make life easier for them, and also because I never felt that I really cared anymore by the time I was getting married, I decided that I didn't need to have a strict diet in that way. So I think that's one way that my religion is publicly different to other people's, or socially different to other people's.
You said that you've only been singled out on account of your culture and not your religion.
Yeah.
Is that something that still happens here at the university or in the city?
I think in certain circles, yes. But I think I've gotten better at not noticing it if it does happen. Mm. I think, to explain it, when I first moved to Oxford and I would show up to a formal dinner, I would be wearing a gown and everything, but I would still feel like I look really weird. I look odd out of everybody else here. And most of the room is not Asian people. They're not people of colour. And I know that I'm probably like being singled out because people are looking at me. And so I think I would hyperfixate on it. I was anxious about it anyway. So then I was picking up on small things and reading them as, I guess, like microaggressions or something like that. But now I've had so much time and experience in Oxford that I don't notice it when I walk into a room and it's mostly other white people. I don't really care either because I think that I've become so much more confident in how I carry myself that it doesn't bother me if I am confronted with someone who has different backgrounds and experiences than I do. I can still navigate conversation pretty comfortably with them. So I would say that it doesn't happen so much anymore, partly because I don't notice it as much anymore and partly because my demeanor has completely changed. Mm. I'm comfortable in who I am. So I think that that reflects in how people approach me too.
Ishwa, you grew up in the UK, you know, you reflecting back, what do you think it means to be Muslim in the UK in 2024?
It means a lot of different things.
Yeah. I mean, reflecting back, like reflecting on the past and the present moment, what do you think it means to be a Muslim? I know being Muslim means a lot of different things.
Mm.
It's not a monolithic category, but just, you know, what's your...
Well, like you said, it's not a monolithic category, but also Muslim communities in the UK can be so diverse and different.
Exactly.
And so I don't want to kind of paint anyone in broad brush strokes, but I think that... Sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I think based on my past, I would say that being Muslim now, or going forward, is going to be different to how I was Muslim in the UK in my upbringing and childhood. There is a lot more, I think, acceptance and inclusivity in a lot of ways. Growing up, I don't remember ever seeing, for example, halal meat sections in Tesco. And now you have that quite regularly in lots of different places. I don't remember having halal food places in different areas of the UK either, but it's much more acceptable and common now. There's a lot of there's a lot of Muslim communities in diverse places of the UK, as well as not diverse places too. So I think on the whole, going forward, the UK is maybe probably a better place to be a Muslim in than it used to be. I won't say too much about politics, but I do think that politically, there are efforts to sow division and there's kind of divisive rhetoric, especially in politics, that negatively impacts Muslim communities in the UK.
What kind of divisive rhetoric?
For example, lots of conservative rhetorics in recent events have been about, you know, stopping the boats and demonising immigrants, and also with that is a connotation of Muslim communities and cultures, and that I think is very damaging to the public, the UK public's perception of Muslim communities and also Islam in general.
Right.
But the lived experience, I would say, is not a bad one. I don't think that a lived experience in the UK as a Muslim, by my experiences at least, has been uncomfortable. And going forward, I don't think that it will be uncomfortable. I hope and I expect that it will continue to be an accepting and an open environment for Muslims to practice their faith alongside other people who don't practice the same faith as them, and for those other people to be okay with it, that it's a common part of British social fabric now, that we have a really diverse, population.
You know, this is just one thing that I was wondering.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who have reached out to me in response to the project announcement, I think it's very interesting to, you know, we're all so busy, and this is that end of the term, people are busy at exams. It's so great that you were able to take out time for this. But I wonder why you thought that you wanted to participate in this project.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Because as soon as I saw it, I thought that the project, for example, when I saw the email about this project, I was so impressed that there was something that was documenting Muslim experiences in Oxford, because that is not something that I have seen happen before.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just ignorant of it if there is, but I have never seen a concerted effort to kind of, you know, examine or record Muslimness in the city. And I think that it's so important because there's a huge Muslim population here, and I see the difference from when I first moved to Oxford to where I am now, that, for example, you know, Islamic society events are much more, you know, attended than they used to be. And there's a lot more people from different diverse backgrounds than there used to be. And that's something that I really notice. So I think that I was interested in getting involved because I've been here for a while. I love Oxford now, and I had a hard time loving Oxford at first, but it's really where my home is because I've been an adult here and grown up here for a long time. And I think that it felt like it would be a shame if I passed up the opportunity to be a part of something that influenced me and impacted me. You know, being a Muslim in Oxford was a lived experience for me, and it still is, it will always be. And so I kind of wanted to put that down in a concrete way.
Yeah, that's lovely. That makes, yeah, that sounds great. I just, yeah, that's, and anything else you want to add, you know, anything at all about your story, about anything in relation to the project?
I really can't think of anything at this moment, other than just it's a great project, and I really hope that I can read it when it comes out and you see more about it along the way. But I don't have any other things to contribute, I think.
No, this is great. Thank you so much again for your time. No, I'm just gonna switch that off.
Yeah, sure. Oh wow, that went much quicker than I thought.
Yeah.